قال الله عز وجل وهو أصدق القائلين في كتابه الكريم لتبلون في أموالكم وأنفسكم ولتسمعن من الذين أوتوا الكتاب من قبلكم ومن الذين أشركوا أذى كثيرا وإن تصبروا وتتقوا فإن ذلك من عزم الأمور. Brothers and sisters, committed Muslims, Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, you will be tested in your wealth and in your person, and you will most surely hear from those who are given previous scripture, meaning the Jews and the Christians. You will most surely hear the most vile calumnies and the most egregious propaganda from them. And also you will hear the worst kind of lies from those have rejected Allah and from those who deny His presence in the human affairs. And if you have patience and if you persevere and if you maintain your focus on Allah, the one who has all the power, then indeed in these kinds of situations, that is the greatest accomplishment. Before I get started, I'd like to extend congratulations to our brothers and sisters in the Islamic Republic of Iran. But they have withstood 30 years of sanctions and 30 years of isolation. And they have come through it with shining colors. This is a country which just a few days ago joined only 9 other countries in the world by launching a domestically produced satellite into space. Even the state of Israel has not launched a satellite by itself into space. To have done this, they would have had to have produced all of the domestically educated talent and all of the domestically educated professionals to be able to combine their efforts, to coordinate them, and to direct it towards achieving this great feat. And this is despite the fact that this country has been under sanctions, economic sanctions, political sanctions. Any kind of sanction that you can think of has been applied to this country. But despite that fact, they are now producing close to 100% of their engineers. They are producing 100% of their computer scientists. They are producing 100% of their journalists. And they are producing 90% of the professionals whose services are being used to bring the Islamic Republic on par with the rest of the advanced nations in the world. For some would say that with this ideological component, that even though this nation is technologically behind, as far as the human element is concerned, it is the most advanced nation on earth.
Wow.
but producing aircraft and producing professionals and producing all of your defensive and offensive military hardware is perhaps the byproduct of the more important thing. And were it not for the independence that this nation or this country has shown over the past 30 years, the fruit of that independence is now beginning to blossom worldwide. For even though they have this technology domestically, they can now begin to compete with the other advanced nations in the world. Because they can begin to sell this value of producing satellites, of building your own bridges, of having your own communications network. They can begin to compete with the advanced nations of the world. But they will compete with them on a principal basis. And they will go to the third world, which is in much need, which is in great need of these services and these technologies. And they will produce these technologies for these people who are desperately in need of them at perhaps one-tenth or one-twentieth of the cost that the advanced nations of the world are charging these people and committing them to 50 years of interest payments. And this is what threatens the industrialized world. That they are beginning to have competition in an area which they dominate. And this at a time when their financial system has failed. And this at a time when they are in much need of finances. And also beyond that, were it not for the impetus that came from the independence of this great Islamic revolution, what you saw from Turkey perhaps would not have happened had this revolution not taken place 30 years ago. For certainly 30 years ago, Turkey did not have the courage to come out in the way that it came out with regard to the crisis in Gaza. And it is because of the strength which this Islamic revolution has spread in its Islamic domain in the Middle East that other Muslims are beginning to feel the oath of courage. And as they begin to feel the oath of courage, in the coming days, they will begin to shed the chains of oppression. And so we would like to congratulate once more our brothers and sisters in the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we would like to share in their progress. And we make the most fervent du'as for them that as they make their progress and as they strike terror in the hearts of those who feel now threatened, that Allah Ta'ala continues to keep them under His protection. And He continues to bless them as He has blessed them in the past 30 years. To begin my comments on the situation in Gaza, I'd like to start off by acquainting you with a quote from a person that is regarded to be a great statesman. And I think that these words are instructive to help us understand the kind of mentality which can countenance the kind of suffering which was inflicted on innocent men, women, children, and babies in Gaza and in other places in the world. But this is not by accident. It has an ideological foundation, and it has support academically, politically, militarily. But at its very core, the support comes from a certain kind of thought process, from a certain kind of exclusivism. And so this person says, I do not understand the squeamishness about the use of gas. I am strongly in favor of using poison gas against uncivilized tribes. And in another quote, the same person said, I do not agree that the dog in the manger has the final right to the manger, even though he may have lain there for a very long time. I do not admit that right. I do not admit that a great wrong has been done to the Red Indians of America or the black people of Australia. I do not admit that a wrong has been done to these people by the fact that a stronger race, a higher grade race, a more worldly wise race has come in and taken their place. Now we might think that these words are attributed to Adolf Hitler, or perhaps Benito Mussolini, or perhaps even more recently to Ariel Sharon, or Ehud Olmert, or Ehud Barak, or any one of those people that are around nowadays. But many of you will be surprised that these words came from Winston Churchill, considered in the Western world to be a great statesman, the savior of the UK after World War II. And to whom was he referring to when he was talking about inferior races in this quote? He was referring to Arabs and to Muslims. Brothers and sisters, he was referring to you and to me when he was referring to inferior races. In another quote, and this one by the National Security Advisor of President Jimmy Carter back in the late 70s. He was queried in 1998 about the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in December of 1979, which kicked off the 25 years war which continues to this day in Afghanistan, which has claimed perhaps over 1.5 million lives through 2009. And he was talking about what prompted the Soviet invasion. Because until this quote, or until this admission in 1998 by Mr. Brzezinski, it was thought that the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan on its own will. But again, listen to this quote. He said, regret what? The secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap. And you want me to regret that? The day the Soviets officially crossed the border, I wrote to President Carter, we now have the opportunity of giving the USSR its Vietnam War. And so when he's saying, or alluding to, is that President Jimmy Carter, at the suggestion of his national security advisor, signed an executive order to begin agitation in Afghanistan 6 months before the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And perhaps that agitation began even sooner than that, which prompted the Russians to invade Afghanistan. And then when he was asked by the same interviewer in 1998, weren't you afraid that you are empowering Islamic fundamentalists? And weren't you afraid that you were giving war, that you were giving wealth and weapons to future terrorists? And in response, this is what Mr. Radinsky said. What is more important in world history? The Taliban or the collapse of the Soviet Union? Some agitated Muslims or the liberation of Central Europe and the end of the Cold War? And so there you have it. We are either a footnote in history, or we are savages and animals, according to Winston Churchill. We're not capable of ruling ourselves, and thereby we require more civilized people to come in and rule us. And if that's not possible, then we either ought to be caged or killed. And these people, brothers and sisters, are referring to you and to me. They are referring to your wives, your fathers, your mothers, your sons, your daughters, your babies, your aunts, your uncles, and all of the other people that you know who characterize themselves as Muslims, who characterize themselves as Arabs, who characterize themselves as Turks, who characterize themselves as Indians and Pakistanis, or Malaysians, or what have you. This is the kind of mentality, brothers and sisters, that makes it easy to drop bombs on those people that these others who have the power consider to be uncivilized. And so there are those in this world who would have you and me believe that the hallmark of their civility, and thereby the greatest difference between them and us, is the recognition of an elected government. Tell them to come to terms with us. And there are those who would have you believe that the hallmark of their civility, and thereby the difference between them and us, is that they long ago gave up on the church to have any influence on their politics, on their social affairs, and on their state policy. Tell them to come to terms with us. And there are those who would tell you and me that the hallmark of their civility, and thereby the difference between them and us, is that they recognize the right of national cultures to exist. Tell them to come to terms with us. Let us distinguish between rhetoric and reality, between word and deed. All of the world's races, exclusivists, supremacists, elitists, have come together on one side in this conflict. The Zionists in Tel Aviv, the imperialists in Washington and in London, and their proxy functionaries in Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. They have all come together on one side. And what is it that they are supporting? What is it that they are coming together on one side of this equation? Let us look at the history. And let us look at the facts. For this is a good occasion to remind ourselves of some of that history. In 1947, a year before the emergence of the Zionist cancer which occupied Palestine, Jews owned only 7% of the land. But the UN partition plan awarded them 55% of the land. In 1967, in the so-called Six-Day War, these same people went and blew up an American ship, killing 34 sailors. And at the same time, they occupied the Golan Heights, the Sinai, the West Bank, and Gaza. And it was at that time that this state emerged as the only state in the world that doesn't have defined borders. And it remains today the only state in the world where you can't pinpoint or ask them to pinpoint where their borders are. And then in 1973, to suggest to the rest of the world that we are making confessions, they quote-unquote gave the Sinai back to Egypt. Never mind the fact that the Sinai has nothing to do with the Palestinians. Never mind the fact that the Egyptian president, who was a party to this negotiation, was not concerned about the Palestinians. Never mind the fact that he was only concerned about his legacy in Western history books. And never mind the fact that the key issues on the ground, the settlement, the final status of Jerusalem, and the status of returning refugees, never mind the fact that none of these things were ever addressed in Camp David. The first time. And in addition to giving back the Sinai, what was also supposed to happen is an arrest on the settlement in the West Bank. But that has continued to this day. And while what was going on in Gaza, what was lost was what was going on in the West Bank. Hamas was the duly elected government of the Palestinian people in a free and a fair election. If there are any sacred cows in the democratic world, it ought to be an elected government. It ought to be that elected government is sacred. But when that elected government is populated by people you don't like, or people you don't approve of, then it is no longer an elected government. It is a government of elected terror. And so we go back to the words of Allah, that you will hear the most vile calumny leveled against you by people of previous scripture. And what is a more vile calumny than to characterize an elected civilian government as terrorists? This is the government of the West Bank, and it is the government of Gaza. But the systematic land confiscation in the West Bank never stopped. It continues to this day. To such an extent that now, only 40% of the West Bank is available to the indigenous population of Palestine. The settlements are connected by superhighways that the Palestinians are not allowed to use. For a Palestinian to travel 2 kilometers in the West Bank takes 4 hours. For an Israeli settler, squatter, colonizer, to travel the same distance takes 2 minutes. And then, of course, there's a wall in the West Bank. It consumes another 15% of the territory of the West Bank. And ever since 2005, when these Israelis claimed to have withdrawn from Gaza, the number of checkpoints in the West Bank has gone up from 500 to 700. And at these checkpoints, Muslim women are humiliated with strict searches. They are held there for 4 hours. And they are humiliated with words and with deeds. And every day, the number of checkpoints that are present in the West Bank is increasing. Secular activity or colonizing activity, let's dispense with the euphemism. From 1995 until today, the number of settlers in the West Bank has gone up from 109,000 to 275,000. And if we count East Jerusalem, there are 500,000 Jewish settlers, colonizers, usurpers in the West Bank. So when they talk about a two-state solution disingenuously, hypocritically, are they talking about a two-state solution where an independent Palestine could be contiguous? Of course it can't be, because right now, the Palestinians are stuck into a bunch of cantons. Bantustan, economically deprived areas. They can't go from one canton to the next without going through 1,000 checkpoints. Is it possible to have a state when you can't see your neighbor? Is it possible to have a state when you have no access to fresh water? Is it possible to have a state when you don't have a military? Is it possible to have a state when you don't have control over your food supply? But that's the kind of state they want the Palestinians to have. And to add insult to injury. Not only are most of the IDF officers, that's the Israeli Defense Forces, and those in their media, and those in their government, not only are most of these people ex-settlers, but they call the West Bank contested territory, not occupied territory. Meaning that these Zionists feel that they have a parallel claim to the West Bank. And that they are not going to give up hope of having control over the entire West Bank and beyond until they have greater Israel. On the current situation, in Gaza. News has come out today that the United Nations Relief and Works Agency has suspended shipments of food and medical supplies into Gaza. And the reason? They accuse Hamas of confiscating these supplies. But what are they telling you? Reports coming from Hamas, number one, is that they did not confiscate these supplies. Number two, Hamas representatives tell us that the agents who are distributing this humanitarian aid from the United Nations from other relief agencies are telling the Muslims, the people of Gaza, that this is a gift from the Palestinian Authority and from Fatah. Should we trust humanitarian agencies across the world when they are infested with intelligence agents from across the world? They couch their imperial and Zionist program under a cover of humanitarian aid. Have they no conscience? And they call us terrorists. And certainly one who calls you and considers you to be a dog in your own territory has no conscience. The timing of the invasion. Once again, they think that they're not watching. What broke the ceasefire is what happened on November 4th. When these Zionists went in, and in a targeted assassination killed six members of Hamas. On November 4th, also, the election of the first black president of the United States took place. Is this a coincidence? This is a strategic day that was chosen to break the ceasefire. Because it was thought that the rest of the world was paying attention to the U.S. election. And that this would be an interesting cover to break the ceasefire. But this is all part of the strategy. This is all part of what they call strategic escalation. They talk about it. They just expect you not to listen. They write about it. They brag about it. That we've been using this kind of strategy since 1956. That we go in and we agitate our adversaries, and we get them to attack us, and because we own the media, we can say that they attacked first, therefore rationalizing our disproportionate response, therefore rationalizing a killing ratio of 100-1. Strategic escalation. Another term that we often remember. Then there's the massacre of Zaytun. We saw heart-wrenching images on this video a few minutes ago. Our Palestinian women and children were herded into buildings with an assumption that they would be safe in these buildings. Only had them bombed a few minutes later. This is no different than the massacres that took place in the years that preceded the establishment of the Zionist embassy in the Holy Land. On top of that, how many Palestinian mothers were forced to make Sophie's choice? This is a choice where you have to choose which of your children are going to live and which of them are going to die. Where you have to point out to your executioner that I want this child to live and I want that one to die. And this is a choice that was given to Palestinian mothers once the ground invasion ensued in Gaza. And for those women who did not make the choice, their children were slaughtered in front of them. And what is the cause? What is the cause of the existence of this Zionist cancer in the holy man? A million dead in Iraq. For certainly this war was fought to guarantee the security of Israel. 4 million displaced, 2 million orphans, 4 million orphans, 1 to 2 million widows, hundreds of thousands dead in Afghanistan, and who knows how many will die in the upcoming wars in Pakistan and in the Islamic Republic. How much has this cost just the economy of the United States alone? Some estimates say that with the close relationship of the United States with Israel over the last 60 years, that in 2002 dollars, this has cost the United States $1.6 trillion. That, brothers and sisters, is an entire year's budget of the United States. Meaning that if they took all of their taxpayer revenue from 100 million working people in the United States for an entire year, that's the cost that this country, or this cancer, has been to the people of the United States. And what about the recent banking crisis that just took place in the United States and is continuing to unfold in front of our eyes? Trillions of dollars are being lost from the U.S. economy. And word is out that some percentage of these money are going to 3 Israeli banks. These 3 are called the Hapoalim Group, Bank Leumi, and the Discount Bank Group. And like good bank accounts, nobody knows where the money is coming from, and nobody knows where it's stored. And this is not unlike a crisis which took place in the United States 25 years ago. So 25 years ago, there was a savings and loan crisis in the United States, where the depositors of the savings and loan were robbed of about $2 billion. And who was at the center of this crisis? Another Zionist by the name of Michael Nelson. And in the midst of this banking crisis, you have another Zionist by the name of Bernie Madoff. And this time, it's $50 billion, and nobody knows where these $50 billion have gone. And he's just been charged with one count of securities fraud, which gets you 5 years and $5 million. Where the black man stealing $1,000 gets 25 years in prison. Where is the conscience? But it is these conscienceless people that are the occupiers and the perverters and the persecutors of Gaza and the West Bank and points beyond. So it is obvious to us, and it should be obvious to all of those who look upon this situation, that there is no commitment to peace on that side. By the comments of their own representatives, he who headed the quartet before Tony Blair, the ex-head of the World Bank, James Wolfensohn, according to his words and he's working for them. He said that the United States and Israel did everything on earth to undermine the agreement between the Palestinian Authority and the Israelis. And this is their own representative. And besides, if they were serious on having peace in that area, they would impose 30 years of sanctions on the Islamic Republic. Put about sanctions on the Zionist chancellor in the Holy Land. Their economy is already in trouble. Sanctions would force them to halt settlement. What about military sanctions? No, they're talking about sanctions on Hamas. They're talking about limiting the weapons that Hamas is receiving through tunnels from Egypt. Hamas is receiving sugar and fertilizer to make rockets. Hamas is not receiving white phosphorus. Hamas is not receiving dying weapons. Hamas is not receiving F-16. Hamas is not receiving bomber buster missiles. Hamas is not receiving Abrams tanks. Hamas is not receiving the latest intelligence and the latest guided system about where to direct the missiles. If you want to put an arms embargo on someone, why not put it upon this hyper arms to the teeth bear in the Holy Land? Brothers and sisters, social justice is a natural human yearning. The pursuit of it will go on whether we as Muslims of this generation are part of it or not. And therefore we should be a part of it and we should aim to lead it. The conceptual clarity, the ideological fortitude, and the will to sacrifice that we bring to this struggle cannot be equaled by anyone in this world or in history. We are ready to join anyone who agrees to the standard of Allah's book and the model of His Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And we are ready to have anyone join us who confirms this standard. For we understand this group better than anybody else in the world. We understand this particular oppressor because we have information on how he thinks and how he behaves from Allah's true word. And because we understand him, we have the capacity to know how to deal with him. And that is why we ought to be proud to say the following words, spoken from one free person to another, spoken from those who are shedding the chains of oppression to their oppressor. Get off my land. Death to Israel. Death to Zionism. Death to racism. We shall not countenance a state of Israel, even if it was located on the dark side of Jupiter, or for that matter, anywhere in this universe. For as a famous American said on the day before he was assassinated, justice is indivisible, and injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله.